In 2018 and 2019, St. John's Lutheran Church of Northfield is conducting oral histories of its members. My name is Judy Carlson, and today we'll be interviewing St. John's members, Barbara and John Walters, longtime members of the congregation. Welcome, Barb and John. I'm looking forward to hearing your St. John's story. Well, I think we'll first start out with, when did you first join St. John's, and what attracted you to the church?
Well, we came in 1982 and joined the church almost right away. Millie Berg was our real estate agent, and she introduced us to the church. And Pastor Shetler came and visited us at our home, and so we were introduced right away to the church. And John, what were some of the things that you were saying you...
When Millie took us through, we went into the main room there with pews, and Winston Kessler was playing an organ, and that's the old organ. And I thought it sounded just great, and I loved the light coming through the windows. So this atmosphere attracted it right away. And then the first time we met Dick Shetler, that was just a shoo-in. I just connected with him very strongly. Just the resonance there. So I think those are the two big factors for me.
Uh-huh. And then when we moved here, Tom was just going into high school. So he had his 4 years of high school here. And they had a really active high school group when we moved here in 1982. So that was another factor that fit to our family really well.
Mm-hmm. Where did you move from?
We moved from Madison, Wisconsin, and that's where John was teaching chemistry there, and decided to come to St. Olaf. That's kind of a long story, but John really connected to the Lutheran Church on campus quite a bit when he was at Wisconsin. And he was, even though he had tenure there, he was ready to make a change. He wanted to focus on teaching. And with the Lutheran connection and some connections he made with people here at St. Olaf, he decided that this would be a good place to come. And it turned out to be a very good move for us, both for us as a couple and our family. Mm-hmm. So, John, is there anything else you want to say?
Yeah, only one thing I'd add is that the idea of teaching and research is split in a research university like Wisconsin, and main focus, for the most part, intense focus is on research. Well, I'd had really good relationships with the students in the lab, and this was at a time when a lot of writing was going on. And I guess the thought of trying to continually restart a majorly funded program just didn't connect. And then one of the one of my peers referred to teaching as academic suicide. So it kind of pushed me around a little bit. But Barb, you've summarized it really well. I wanted to focus on something where I felt it really was neat to do and get involved while I was still really young enough to be creative. And I wanted my field represented. So I had opportunity to come here with my tenure, so we made the move.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps the Holy Spirit.
Well, I'm sure of that. There's never any question. You know, you say, you've got to put that in the whole context of things. It's crucial, I think, in my life.
So we came to St. John's at a time where we made a big change in our lives.
Yeah.
And it's been a very important background to everything that we've done here and the... you know, new things that happen to us, and so it's very interwoven into the change that we made. Mm-hmm. So that was Then shortly after we moved here, I had been here a year and was asked to apply for the secretary's job here. So I was secretary for 5 years at St. John's, and that was during the time of Pastor Jacobson, and during the time when he was going through the trauma of his son having cancer. And so it was, in that respect, just a very strong emotional time in the church. And Pastor Shetler picked up a lot of slack with just people who needed a pastor. He picked up a lot of the slack right then. And one of the reasons that I was asked to apply, I think, was because I had been doing some work at St. Olaf on computers and had learned some basic things. Really, Ginny Shaw was worked with me then. And you, Judy, you're interviewing, but I worked for Jim for a year and Don Salling for a year.
Oh, I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, anyway, I had started computer work there, and they wanted to bring the computer into the church. And so I was here for that transition. And
wonderful.
John helped with the whole process because he knew a lot more than I did. And together we just sort of got things started.
You developed and went into the technological
modern world, I guess, a little bit at our church.
So was that in the late 80s?
Mm-hmm. From 83 to 88 is when I was here. Mm-hmm. And, go ahead.
Well, I know that you both have been very involved in service and leadership roles, and I would think that would be a wonderful thing for us to talk about next.
Well, Stephen Ministry is a major part of our experience at church. When I was the secretary, I was a Stephen minister for most of the years I was secretary. And then I went to leadership training. And so I did train one group. And then after I went, John decided he wanted to go to Stephen Ministry training, and so I went to Berkeley, and John went to Baltimore.
She got the
different years.
Yeah.
And we still have Tom home. And so anyway, Stephen Ministry was just, it taught us so much. It was such a good program. And when I did leave the church, I went to work with Shuni Hartwig at St. Olaf and intercultural human relations. Mm-hmm. And that was just a tremendous background for me to, fit into her program. Mm-hmm. And John has a lot of stories about how Stephen Ministry worked with your teaching.
Mm-hmm. When I went to Baltimore, there were, I think, three people leading it, and it must have been close to 200-300 people that were taking it. And at one session, the leaders were up in the front in a room about the size of a major college dining room, and the rest of us were at tables all scattered out the whole thing. And I could not figure out how these men up front were going to manage that big of a crew. And they started out by having the individuals at the tables move in a group of fours, threes, fours, fives, and role play. And they role play serious, like being divorced, discovering cancer. One would have it, one would listen. And as I went through that, I thought, this is really interesting because they've solved the teaching dilemma problem. So you have a group, and how are you going to integrate it? Well, I brought role-playing back with me and introduced it in the laboratories. And it turned out to be quite a major paradigm change in how analytical chemistry is taught. Really exciting for me. The students bought into it straight away. There was one thing I think that had real punch to it, and that was the idea there'd be a role in a group of four people, and one of them was the manager. Of course, the usual thing is the manager gets a grade, and the manager's a smart one, and people are under them. But we rotated the manager. Every 2 weeks, you were don't like a manager, the next 2 weeks, you were manager. And this business of rotating roles connected in the sciences as strongly as I'd seen it connect out there at these tables where people were hearing or listening to trauma. And in a nutshell, that really changed everything for me here. Caused quite a stir.
Mm-hmm. Plus, I remember a lot of stories you had about just, you know, students come to their professors for advice, and sometimes when they're hurting or when they need someone to talk to, and John has expressed to me how important Stephen Ministry was to his interactions with students. And that has just been great for both of us, that program.
Oftentimes a student will come in and they're looking for the answer to problem 2B or something like that. Well, it turns out that's not really what it is. And what Stephen Ministry does is to teach you not to try to fix someone, but to instead allow them legitimacy and expression of what they're dealing with. And that's usually what happened. We worked through 2B in about 5 minutes, and then an hour later, the discussion would have terminated it. Remember, one was the Serbian operation, the daughter over here. Huge stress. But I developed the patience not to try to fix students' problems as the major goal of working with them. That was remarkable. Mm-hmm. Very remarkable. Not that you still have to answer what the problem to be is.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yes.
You've got, that's
oh,
your
yes.
job, but it doesn't have to become the central
listening
focus.
Listening much more important.
Listening is very, very important.
It seems to me that that might have been the student felt okay about approaching you about problems 2E or 2B. Not necessarily sure how, about the other piece, but it rolled nicely into the conversation.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah.
If you allow a conversation to develop where a person is, I say, legitimized, that there it's important, their expression of their dilemma is as important as the solving of a problem for an assignment, that'll open up quickly. Mm-hmm. Now, the Stephen Ministry had a very interesting thing that allowed me to do this, a belief that you come in the front door and Christ comes in the back door in one of these sessions. And that allowed me to, I don't know whether the word practice is right, but I could still express my feelings towards these students in a solid Christian manner without proselytizing them or, of all horrors of horrors, actually mentioning Jesus in St. Olaf environment.
Yes.
That's surprising. The sciences are really acerbic, and that's too bad because they solve a lot of human problems. I'm blabbering here, Barbara.
Blabbering is acceptable. Absolutely.
So much of memories. You're, you know, a lot of what was successful in this was Jim Ennisfa. And he would find ways of funding me that were outside the traditional lines that you would try to develop a research program. So Jim was really very, very helpful in getting things done in this model of role-playing and active listening, because that was really something very different in a chemistry course.
And actually, probably because of Jim, I knew about that, but I didn't know the basis of where you had learned the role playing. And so that's wonderful history. I knew that you did that with your students and you allowed them. And also, it seems to me that another part of us, that situation, you'll have to let me know if this is correct or not, is that it allowed students when they graduated and went into whatever situation their career was presenting, they had experience as leaders and leadership roles in the company or corporation or school district or any kind of system.
Oh, that is so true. An example of that happened just this year. I got a letter from one of my students. And he says, "Doc, some days I go to work, I'm a manager, some days I'm a chemist, some days I'm big on hardware, and some days I just have to deal with wet solution chemistry."
Yes.
And that is the job of a professional person in a problem-solving situation.
Yes.
I knew this from my background, but presenting it in that manner was different. There's to say, too, there was another professor there that helped me and did strong student contact, and that was Wes Pearson.
Oh, yes.
He gave up his research lab for me to find space to implement my senior courses, and that really was something.
Leadership roles, Barbara, or John, either? You've been real involved in WELCA, I know, Barbara.
I have. I was looking up the history, and I've been on the board for 13 years, so that is a long time. But I started out when I retired on the board, because I knew, well, it kind of goes back to when I was secretary. We worked with a lot of volunteers in the office. We didn't have as many support people as we do in the church today. And so the women in the women's organization, I'll call it Women of the ALCA now anyway, some of them were just so helpful. They'd come in and offer their time. And someone like Dorothy Wolfe, I remember, Marie Benson's mother.
Yes.
Some of those older women, I just had so much respect for them and for what they were doing with the programs that for Lutheran World Relief and so on. So I sort of thought when I retired, I'd like to be a part of that group. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did when I retired. And I was president for, I think, president for 4 years, but then I moved to treasurer, and that was a good spot for me to continue, because it was one of those things where it's hard to hand over that particular job a little bit, because it's a little bit complex. And so I was on the board for that long. Mm-hmm. And it has been, I've met so many people in church. I know so many people through that program that we have within our church, that it's just been really special to me.
Are you still involved?
Last year was my last year. I have now gone off the board. So there are good people, though, that have, enthusiastic people that are carrying on. Mm-hmm. And so I was, it was a really easy time for me just to say, okay, someone else needs a turn. Mm-hmm. So
but you can still attend and influence and
definitely
support, and that would be your style.
Definitely. So,
well, I'm also intrigued with and impressed with the photography that you do, John. Is that something you want to share a little bit about? I see some right in front of, as we go in one of the entrances, some new, looks like new, beautiful pictures of St. John's, or did I just not notice them before?
Well, I was involved more with digital photography after I retired, and I found that I liked the way in which I saw certain things within the sanctuary and around the all the open areas, because they represented a certain beauty. And I've always felt that the church is going to be the body of Christ, and that that's a beautiful thing, and it should be expressed somehow, so that you were constantly reminded that this was something really special. So I began shooting pictures of things as they affected me. And first work was on the Worship Honors Board, when I made an art catalog of some of Fred Gonerman's pictures, trying to locate all the artwork in the church. And then there were just scenes that came up. And the one you're talking about, the sanctuary, that was a really interesting thing to do, where I was trying to bring out what I saw from the front of the room and the back of the room against the light coming through from the stained glass. And I fooled around with that for several weeks getting that right. It turned out the prints were really nice. So Judy Swanson immediately put those up. But there's other things, too, that I've seen here that have really spoken to me internally, and that's more of the kind of contribution that I could make, because I came out of an environment where it had had all the committee work I had cared to handle the rest of my life, thank you. But this was one way of bringing this stuff to the fore. And almost always I would get a picture here or there, and Judy would put it up, or someone would put it up. And it's evolved that way. I also did new members. I would photograph all the new members. I photographed the staff. These were both feelings of making a contribution, but also learning opportunities for me. I got better with the camera as I did these things. And then I discovered how to have them processed into metal prints of various sizes. Those turned out to be really lovely, and we've given those to the church here to hang. It's been a stepwise kind of thing, but it has allowed me, as they say, to tangibly present what has affected me as an individual, as the beauty of an organization that is clearly the body of Christ.
Before we started recording, here in room 202, you, John, and both of you were telling me about what's behind me here as I sit in the room, of some wire expressions of some wording. Could you expand a little bit to as we record now, what you told me as we came into the room about this beautiful piece of art in this room?
There was a time when I went to a film called The Passion of the Christ, which was quite controversial because we presented the horror of the crucifixion, and sitting in the theater and thinking I was there alone and came home and wondered what on earth I could ever do. And I remembered that when I was a graduate student, I learned how to silver solder wires with a little torch. And I began fooling around with those, and I made some small sculptures just out of wires. And then it occurred to me that this is a nice way to look at something as profound as a crucifixion and present an image in three dimensions of how I saw it in the abstract. The first one I did at the end of that movie, they showed it. One of God's teardrops coming down and striking right next to the crosses. And there's one of those here in the church. I put that together inside of a teardrop falling. And it was a winter, and it kept going on and on. And pretty soon I thought, one of the things that has been such a source of inspiration to me here is a parishioner is how God presents their help, God's help, in terms of the 23rd Psalm, but abstract. You know, it wasn't time-dependent or anything like that. So I began to think, okay, look at one line at a time and make something that comes close to how it's presenting itself to you to lift you up. And so you could do this with a bunch of wires, and you can make forms, and it's a very good way because you could look right through them, and you can see what the line is, what's being said in the psalm, and yet this comes out in front of you. For example, the last one is the perfect sphere, where you're with God forever. This is the absolute most beautiful thing that can exist, is a perfect sphere. Now there's one here where you walk through the valley of death, and it's just these things that are closing in on you with sharp points, so you can never go back. Once you start down there, you can't get out. And then I thought about the one, the rod and thy staff comfort me. I thought, what we have today that is the hospice, and when you're in when you're in hospice, you have a bed and you have people helping you, and I made that in kind of a hospital scene. But the things that occur to me. So, I guess that's it.
And how did you and Judy Swanson connect with the words?
Oh, we were talking about it. When I was done, I took them over to her house. And Steve says, well, lay them out. So we had all these things out all over the living room floor. We started chatting about it. She said, oh, we should put those up there. So, I knew how to do the wire work, but I was nowhere near what could happen with hanging or lettering or things like that. And Judy was. You look at her script and it's just beautiful. So she has something, she comes up with these styrofoam backings and all this stuff mounted on them. I said, oh my gosh. So she took then the role in presenting it here in this, which was a prayer room at one time. The hangings and then what the line was behind that, the combination. I think both of us felt that you come to a prayer room in a certain, oftentimes, state of distress. And if you allow the 23rd Psalm to penetrate you while you have that distress, it's an immense help. That's basically it.
Wonderful history. Oh, I'm so glad you shared that with us.
Well, we both have. You know, we were listening to her here, we did this and did that. It doesn't even come close. She introduced spreadsheets into the whole church.
Correct.
When she first started here, the only program was MultiPlan. It was the first spreadsheet system. Oh my gosh, everyone went nuts over it, that it would actually do these calculations in a tabbed grid form. So then that, and then she knew spreadsheets, and she brought those here, and then she's been active in, well, because she put the whole budget on the spreadsheet, which is, I watched her do all this.
I put everything on.
She ended up knowing more about Excel than I did. It was just wonderful. Barbara does not take up the kind of credit that she's really worth when you think about the hours and hours that went into all these spreadsheets.
Well, learning new things, you know, as we all have done, as technology has increased, it's just hard to keep up. And, luckily I had the opportunities to get involved early before I was, you know, 70. And it's a lot harder to learn new things and so on. So it's
when I call you for funerals, I call from a spreadsheet that was correct, that was created here at church. So next time I look at that, which is going to be tomorrow, because there's a funeral coming up, I'll think, oh gosh, Barbara was influential in teaching people at church how to use these, how to create them and how to use them. That's a great story.
To use them, yeah. Another thing I would like to get in is that I've been part of a circle ever since I moved here in 1982. Mm-hmm. And people have come in and out of the circle, but it's a Bible study, and I've been so influenced by the women in this group, Dolores Mickelson, one. Just the spiritual part of their lives that they share. And so I know that there are a lot of other opportunities for Bible study here at church, but I don't know if anything can replace a small group that becomes intimate and grows to share more and more of what their life is like. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to be sure that's mentioned mm-hmm. as something that I don't know, might not continue, but there are a few groups still, so
still going. Mm-hmm. One of the women that I interviewed talked about the fact before she worked outside the home, she was home during the day with her children, raising them and doing some volunteer, but to go to circle in the evening with this wonderful group of friends was so important. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like that has had mm-hmm. the same effect on you.
Yeah, it has. And of course, when you're studying, the Bible study is important, and our Gather magazines are great now. Some years they've been not as good as others, but it not only teaches you to learn, well, you learn more about the Bible, but and what is said there, but then that leads into intimate discussions you wouldn't have otherwise.
It's a safe environment. Mm-hmm. You trust each other.
Yeah. So, anyway, I wanted to be sure.
Oh, yes. That. I'm glad that you added that. Absolutely. Well, we could talk about music at St. John's. We could talk about favorite hymns or songs. Anything about that that you'd like to add?
It's very, very special part of our church here mm-hmm. at St. John's. I don't know if I have any, specific things to say about the music. And mm-hmm. the coming to church, John and I as a family, and when Tom was here, we've come to church almost every Sunday since we've been here. So that whole experience of being in the church service, both the sermons from our wonderful pastors mm-hmm. and the music and the fellowship has been, an important part of our lives.
So, how has St. John's changed over the years for you?
How has it changed? Well, I was thinking of course, the office and how, we started out with a mimeograph machine and, we're now in the modern world. But, and one more thing about that is, I remember at that time we could only send out one mailing per year because that's all we could afford. And now we communicate with each other, on email and other forms so much that the communication between members and in groups has just, really bloomed. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. I don't know, the basic service, which is part of our lives, is still there. I know there are changes, but nothing that really, really impacts me particularly. Mm-hmm. What about you, John?
Well, to me, this church is a place of worship. I come, I made aware of my sins, forgiveness, thoughts about what all that means, communion. It's a wonderful blessing to have that. And I see it as not so much changes that go on here, it's a fluidic kind of thing where it depends on the pastors who come in, that this is a place where they provide, and sometimes it connects and sometimes it doesn't. There have been people like Dick Shetler, and just well, people that, with whom I felt a strong resonance, and they come and they go, and another comes and another goes, and the church sort of goes up and goes back and goes around, and it's a fluidic thing. Of course, the organ changes, but I really like the older organ, be told. That changes. There's changes made in the sanctuary. There's what Barbara's talking about, the management aspects of it. There's, of course, the St. John's Hall went up, and that was a big thing. Then there were all the roof damage that went on, they had to be repaired, a lot of stuff like that. But the real changes are in the ministers, and they bring. Mm-hmm. Now, my responses to a change in a particular minister will be very different than other people. So that's what I mean, it's fluidic. If you look at it, you participate in it. But that participation as an act of worship is by far the strongest thing that I think this church has and has given me. And it goes, it's at any rate, higher, lower, up, down, week to week, year to year. I don't know whether that makes any sense or not, but the building has to house us all. The building has to exist so it can be housed. Yes. The building has to provide not only a safe place for worship, but comfort and all of the things that go along with that. So it too is a huge dynamic. My goodness. I'm just amazed at that.
Do you have any final reflections you'd like to add?
One thing that I haven't mentioned that I've been doing is working in the archives. And when Joan Olson kind of became ill, she used me as her hands to help organize some things. So I got involved a little bit. And I'm just thinking that the history of this church is just amazing. And I'm just really feel grateful that I've been able to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. It's been a very important part of my life, and I think of John's. Mm-hmm. And our children, as many young children now, they do still go to church. They maybe not every Sunday. And Tom's two children are in high school now, and they both have been confirmed. And John, who lives in Texas now, both of our sons married women who were quite involved in the church. Mm-hmm. So I like to see that is carrying on somewhat mm-hmm. into our children's lives too. Mm-hmm.
They found that the start of the influence here at St. John's.
Tom did.
Tom.
Yeah. Our older son was already in college and living on his own when we moved here.
I see. So. Okay. But you did mention Tom, so
yeah.
He was a part of many things here.
Yes, he was for the 4 years that, and actually longer while he was in college.
Well, what are your hopes for the future of St. John's?
I haven't thought a lot about it. I know that there have been changes and emphasis on family and being sure that, you know, we have enough for children and family here at St. John's. For me, I just hope that it continues to be a strong influence for people in their lives. For me, I don't know. I mean, for me, I just like it to keep on how it is.
As is.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. So, and I haven't worried too much about the future because I won't be here.
I remember that Jesus said that if you ask your father for a fish, he won't give you a snake. God doesn't tell you what to do, but in my case, it's always been when I was in a point of dilemma, I'd ask for help. What I call a window would open, and I could look through it, and there'd be something out there that I could do. I wasn't pushed through it. I had to summon up the desire to make a change and go through it. This church has opened windows. It hasn't had its doctrine jammed on me that I had to follow a certain thing. So every time I have distress, even weekly, just the daily business of where we are in our lives together, Barbara and I, and all that we'll be facing in the future that we know about. Even though all those are there in my mind, windows open up. And I can jump through them. This is one of them. Mm-hmm. I want that. The church has offered the freedom to accept God's undeserved grace. I'd hate to see whatever happens to it diminish that in any way. So we have several churches here. We have young people's church. We have services that are different in churches. We have old people's churches. There's almost like clientele shopping in different stores, and that's the beauty of it. Mm-hmm. You're not just that is. You can find God here.
If one looks.
If you look, if you ask God for help, you ask for a fish, you're not going to get a snake. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to say, here, do this. I don't accept that. You have to say, there it is, I have this thought. Well, I have it. What do you mean you have? God opened that window.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's how we can be inclusive. And maybe that's one of the words kind of that we focus on as a church into the future, the need to be inclusive. And just what John expressed, that you're accepted. You don't have to have a lot of rules put on you, but that you're accepted can be a tremendous feeling for people's lives.
You can tell I'm old school because I still say He instead of God. So is it old habit?
It is.
This isn't going to erase in the next week or two, but I'm working on it.
Well, thank you, Barbara and John, for sharing your story and your family's story as part of the St. John's Lutheran Church sesquicentennial.
Thank you, too.
Yeah, thank you many times.